Maybe this year, your dreams are a little bigger than before. You might be dreaming about a safer car, a new home, or the kitchen of your dreams. CME, Ohio's number one credit union, believes progress starts with understanding your options. You can explore your possibilities in minutes when you see what you qualify for at cmefcu.org. And best of all, there's no impact to your credit. Terms and conditions apply. Equal housing lender, federally insured by NCUA. Visit cmefcu.org for details.
Welcome to the Caleb Durbin Show, otherwise known as the Baseball Insiders Prospect Show. I'm Adam Weinrib, joined by fan-sided MLB's prospect guy, Eric Cole. You can see it right there in the caption. Hey, so Caleb Durbin, not a prospect anymore, but on the move for the second time in 1 year, essentially. And he was, if you are an early watcher of the Prospect Show. If you're not, totally cool. Welcome. Happy to have you. If you're a listener, that's also cool. If you're in the Discord, join the Baseball Insiders Discord. If you're not, if you haven't subscribed to the Baseball Insiders newsletter, why don't you go on to fansided.com/newsletters, go put your email in there. But if this is your first time, probably not aware. If you've been here for a while, we basically founded this show on the guiding principle that Caleb Durbin was good at baseball. And Eric Graves fan, I follow the New York Yankees. He went from one org to the other. The Yankees unlocked him. The Yankees traded him for Devin Williams. I was definitely bereft at the time. But hey, at least we got to watch him in the NL Central. We got to see him blossom. He finished third in the rookie of the year last year. Yesterday morning, in like a 1 hour span, we got a report from, I believe, Alex Spire that said Durbin was at the top of the Red Sox trade wish list. And it was like, well, he shouldn't be traded. So you can be at the top of, you know, you can have him at the top of any wish list, but he's not going anywhere. He just helped transform the Brewers offense in a 97 win season. And then like an hour later, he was traded to Boston. So rampant repercussions. He may not be a prospect anymore, but of course we will be breaking down what he brings to Boston. Not the target those fans were expecting, but could change the dynamic of the offense in a major way. What were the Brewers seeing here? Why did they cut bait so early? Did they do this maybe 2 years before they had to? Prospect concerns, who has to step up, where the added pressure is in Milwaukee. They have gutted the third base depth chart. Absolutely gone all in this trade. So opportunities abound unless they want to swing something big for Isak Paredes. That option's on the table to them. They may even do it before you see this show. But either way, there are prospect opportunities available. And what do the Brewers see in Kyle Harrison and Shane Drohan? All that and more. There's maybe never been a trade better suited to a 22-minute episode of this particular podcast. And here to help me through it is Eric Cole. Eric, we got a whirlwind.
Yeah, this was a bizarre trade rumor turn trade, like in a hurry. You know, you would have thought that the Red Sox would have tried to prioritize power, maybe finding a good defender, but and Durbin certainly qualifies as a good defender, but I don't think that either one of us even remotely thought that the Brewers would give up Durbin. Durbin's like the quintessential Brewers guy. Super versatile, on profile, can run, can play defense. Like, that's the guy that they keep until like the second or third year of arbitration, and then they decide if he's getting paid too much, and then they trade him away. Not literally his rookie year where he just put up rookie of the year numbers. They move him. And again, I almost didn't understand the trade for both sides because I don't think it moves the needle enough for the Red Sox, but I also think that the Brewers probably shouldn't have made it. So like it's kind of an like it's an odd fit on both sides. I still love Durbin. He's a weird profile, and I can kind of understand why there'd be some hesitance, but I think it's being taken a little too far when like now this is the third organization to give up on him when all he's done is prove those people wrong. So it's hard to understand, but definitely a weird trade to open the week with.
Yeah, I mean, give me 30 minutes and I still probably couldn't finish cooking on the number of ways where this doesn't entirely make sense. Durbin is a prototypical Brewer, like you said. He is certainly a prototypical Red Sox, too. They love to agitate. The Dustin Pedroia comp, which was already unavoidable, is now the only thing that I can see when I see him going into that uniform. A perfect complement to a team that has an overload of power, a table setter for a roster that can blow the doors off. And in Boston, outside of a Willier Abreu leap and a full season of Roman Anthony, I don't know where that power is coming from. And now maybe they can overcome that and they just don't care, but he's a dream fit on the 2007 Red Sox. I'm not sure he's as good a fit on the 2026 Red Sox, especially the way that those fans were gassed up in the Ketel Marte trade market. And Alex Bregman, it was clear yesterday that Alex Bregman losing him was a gut punch. They're not ducking that, credit to them. They're not pretending like we always wanted to move off of him in the same way that they acted as if getting rid of Rafael Devers was always the dream. I mean, that it wasn't until it disintegrated. They're acknowledging that, hey, in an ideal world, I think Alex Bregman's probably your third baseman. But somewhere a couple of weeks ago, they pivoted to Ranger Suarez when they had money burning a hole in their pocket. When they did that, they decided our next acquisition will be going all in on defense. You know, we want Marcelo Meyer at third if we can swing it. But you, whoever we're going to add somebody, and whoever we add, it's going to be someone who's capable of the glove. And so that, okay, is Nico Hoerner available? I don't think he was. It would have been silly if he was. The Cubs got Bregman. They're all in for Nico Hoerner's final season. The same way that people are asking the Yankees to trade Jazz Chisholm. It's like, sure, he's probably going to walk after the year, but wouldn't you rather have somebody good on your team in a year where you're trying to win stuff? And that's where I'm at with Nico Hoerner. So then you start thinking about Matt Shaw, who the price is going to be sky high, probably not going to match the performance. You're trading for the top prospect and the potential. You're not trading for the dude who had an 800 OPS in the second half last year with bad swing metrics and bad first half performance and bad under the hood stuff for the majority of the year, below average, even when he was peaking. So never in a million years did I expect Durbin to be available. And like you said, this is the kind of decision the Brewers usually make 2 or 3 years down the line, an eventual assessment. If you're betting on regression, I mean, that's he's just about, the OPS was like 721 last year, and he still affected the game positively in so many ways. He's still a top-tier base runner. He's still, you know, that power might tick up from 11 to 13, 14 homers, even though Fenway Park seems like a bad park fit, but also he's a smart hitter. He knows how to hit. If he has to start adapting to a home ballpark like that, I think he probably will. I think he's a good to great player. I think the Brewers got one of the best versions of him, but also I think they got a baseline version of him. I don't know. Like, he defies the hard hit profile at every level. I don't think he's going to suddenly just stop hitting 1 year. I don't think he can be figured out. He doesn't K. He doesn't miss. This is who he is. Maybe when he slows down at age 32. So I don't know why the Brewers are so ready to get rid of him. I don't know why Boston thought he was the solution other than all in on defense. Like, it, you know, man, if you could just add him. And now there are even Boston people thinking about, well, does the, you know, the Diamondbacks wanted early Ortoli and Meyer for Ketel Marte. What about early Ortoli and Durbin for Ketel Marte? You still have Boston fans fiending for Ketel Marte. We've talked a little bit about what he provides the Red Sox, even if it's not what they were expecting. From the Brewers' perspective, for you, why cut bait on the third place finish? We know Jesus Mate and Luis Pena are not ready yet. And we know that eventually there will be an infield logjam in Milwaukee, but it doesn't feel like there is one now. And now there's no third baseman to speak of. Monasterio and Sigler also go to Boston. So either they got to do some quick work or they're up a creek. Like, what's going on here?
Why choose a Sleep Number smart bed?
Can I make my site softer?
Can I make my site firmer?
Can we sleep cooler?
Sleep Number does that, cools up to 8 times faster, and lets you choose your ideal comfort on either side, your Sleep Number setting. Enjoy personalized comfort for better sleep night after night. And now, during our President's Day sale, take 50% off our limited edition bed, plus an extra $100 off all mattresses. End Saturday, only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
It's a tough one to pin down. If they really loved Kyle Harrison, then you can at least understand why there would be the basis of a conversation. But the Brewers got rid of Anthony Sigler, who I was not particularly high on. I thought he was a really fun draft prospect when he was a switch pitcher and a switch hitter, but he stopped being either of those things, and he stopped being a catcher, right? So he just became like this guy. But they get rid of Monasterio and they get rid of Durbin. You're right. Jesus Bade and Luis Pena probably aren't going to be ready. It makes me wonder a little bit if they liked Kyle Harrison enough to say, okay, we can trade Durbin away, and we can give Cooper Pratt a chance over there, who does have a strong arm and was a very highly regarded prospect until a down year last year. He's been at the higher levels of the minors a bit longer. Maybe they give him a shot and they give him a year to figure it out. If he's good, then they can make a decision on the other guys. That's the only kind of the roster domino that makes the most sense to me, because you give him a shot. If it's true that the guy last year that Pratt was is the guy he just is, he's going to be a good enough defender at third where you're not going to be losing too much. And then they can, okay, then we get him out of the way. We move him on, put him in another trade package for somebody else. And then we focus on Peña or focus on Mane, whoever's ready. My money would be on Mane. But again, it's a weird situation, man. Like, the Brewers always, like, at the end, you're like, okay, I see the vision now. But this is one where I'm just like, I just feel like you made your team worse unnecessarily. And maybe they are higher on Pratt than I am right now. I think Pratt was a pretty good hitting prospect who kind of encountered some difficulties, but that's the domino that makes the most sense to me, because I don't see anyone like a free agent that's still lingering out there that they could throw a one-year deal to or something.
It's just sort of the textbook definition of you don't know what you're going to get until you ask, and you should ask multiple times and agitate until a team is willing to. I don't see the vision either. I could see it down the line, but I don't see it for 2026. And every year, Matt, I hate when teams throw years away. Every year matters. This reminds me of earlier in the offseason, and I think this tells you something about who Craig Breslow is. There were rumors floating around that he was insistently asking the White Sox about Kyle Teal. And that is the prospect, one of the centerpiece players he traded away for Garrett Crochet. And at that time, when that rumor is hitting, and it hit multiple times from multiple sources, and you're sort of thinking to yourself, if you're like me, well, that's ridiculous. You have to give to get in a trade, and they gave for Garrett Crochet, and they got Garrett Crochet. And there is legitimately no reason for the White Sox to undo any part of that. Chicago is thriving based on their return in that deal. They miss Crochet. Yeah, they're not thriving at the major league level. But they miss Garrett Crochet, but they're happy with Braden Montgomery. They are happy with Kyle Teal, and they're probably happy with Chase Mydroth, right? You wouldn't want to randomly go, well, let's try to cash Teal in for a couple additional lottery tickets from Boston system. You got him. He's in place. You don't have to worry about that anymore. You have your catcher of the future. So I shrugged that off and was like, I mean, yeah, good thinking, trying to get creative, and it's ironic that he was in your system and you want him back, but a rookie catcher who just sort of established himself prior to year two as someone who's presumably locked down that position long-term, the White Sox might have to consider trading Edgar Caro, but they probably don't have to consider trading either of those guys. But Craig Breslow did not care about the logic, asked enough that it got published and publicized, and the White Sox had to squash it. But at some point, they might have been tempted to explore it based on the return. This feels like the same thing. Why would the Brewers get rid of Caleb Durbin immediately after he made that big league impact? Not just a prospect or a vision anymore, a rookie of the year finalist, someone who I don't know how much more tremendously high the ceiling is. Like, I don't think he's going to be a 20 homer bat. I don't think he's going to be an MVP, might be a World Series MVP, could win you an ALCS by hitting 412 in a short series. But this is probably him. This is the player. And for the Brewers to get bogged down enough by Craig Breslow, this is sort of a ridiculous request, but he probably tried multiple times and he probably gave them something that they really believed in. And all of a sudden, it's real. So the Kyle Harrison or David Hamilton part of it, I guess, probably if I'm power ranking dudes who I think the Brewers are going to unlock, it's like Drouin and then Kyle Harrison and then David Hamilton. Any pitcher in the Brewers lab has a chance to hit a ceiling we might not have foreseen for them. Red Sox fans should not care at all. This is your SP9 and your SP14 going to Milwaukee for an infield solution. But like you said, it feels like such a mismatch that it's pretty clear they have to have seen something in Harrison and his top 100 prospect tape from 2023. And Drouin, who is blocked and hanging out at AAA and is sort of on the outskirts of the roster. What do you think about the Brewers' return? I mean, not even saying equal, unequal, but just what might these guys have that the Brewers can work with?
So Drouin feels like the lottery ticket, maybe kind of like a fun project. You make a couple changes and you see if you unlock something. And Hamilton's not a guy who I've liked very much for a while. So I think he's just kind of organizational depth. So it comes down to me, one, how likely you think Drouin is just going to all of a sudden turn into, you know, a real player. But Harrison has the build and the stuff to be a very good pitcher in the league. But what has happened probably since he was in Double-A was that his fastball being very good was no longer being enough, right? And if you look at his Statcast profile in the major leagues, that's kind of what it's been. The fastball has looked good. It's averaging 97 miles an hour, you know, from the left side like that. He's a tough look for a lot of guys. But his slider doesn't fool anybody, and neither does his changeup. So what do you do with that information? How do you teach someone to be better about that? My hunch is that the Brewers think that they have a fix to his slider specifically. I think a changeup, basically you have other pitches that set up each other. And if you can fit the changeup in the right speed area, that it can work wherever. But if it's not enough separation or you don't have enough different options, then guys can sit on it or they can spit on it and they don't have to worry about the pitch at all. So I think that they think they have a fix to the slider. And if the slider is good, well, I guess it's classified as a slurve, but it was called a slider the whole time he was going up. So a little bit of a different situation. But I think they can fix his breaking ball, whatever you want to call it, sweeper, slurve, whichever one version comes out. And if they can fix that, a guy who can a plus fastball at least with an above average or plus slider is a very good pitcher. And you're right. The Brewers, I mean, Whit Priester is an example of a guy that they kind of unlocked out of nowhere, and they've been really forward-thinking, I think, with their pitching prospects. They've targeted the guys who are like out of the JUCO ranks. That's how they got Mizorowski, for example. That they have a profile that they like, and if they point at a guy and say, this is worth a weird trade, it's at least fair to give them some benefit of the doubt there. I'm just skeptical that that's going to end up being the case. I think he ends up probably being a back-of-the-rotation starter with that. Well, like every month or so, we'll have a start where you're just like, wow, that was really good. And then one start a month where you're just like, hello, darkness, my old friend. It's because he is that kind of variation in terms of how his stuff has played, especially when it comes to swing and miss in the majors.
I just can't believe that there isn't a world where he's still available in June. Like, given his lack of importance to the Red Sox chances of success this year, that like you can't pull a Priester if you're the Brewers and you really love him. And you can't be like, hey, I see Kyle Harrison's got like a 4.48 ERA in Worcester. Like, you guys still in love with him? Or would you like that comp B pick? Or would you like, you know, some middling Anthony Sigler straight up? I mean, that's not going to work. But I'm telling you something a little bit lower than once he's got another couple of months of being buried in Boston. Can't you tempt Craig Breslow instead of engaging on this front? I would think that you could, but again, I'm not in the room and I'm not in the Brewers' evaluation of Durbin. So that is just conjecture, but it is just so weird to see this tick across, especially given what I was told Boston wanted and what I saw in Milwaukee last year. You know, you intro'd the trade the perfect way. It doesn't seem to really make sense for anyone. It gets an annoyingly good player who we love, a really helpful piece, a winner to the Boston Red Sox, but it doesn't fulfill their mandate. And it gets pieces that I feel like could have been available later this summer with little to no resistance to Milwaukee, but it gets there in such an odd route. Now, the pressure is on a couple guys in Milwaukee to fill in. Jett Williams comes over from the Mets just a couple of weeks ago, all of a sudden takes on increased importance. We had a commenter yesterday going off on Andrew Fisher, who I played a little bit of third base, and I do wonder how quickly he moves. I don't see, and talk about seeing the vision, that is not one I see, but I would be curious your thoughts on his role in this whole process. But which Brewers prospects are now under a little more immediate pressure? You know, Cooper Pratt, you brought up, but what's up on Williams? What's up on Fisher?
Okay, we'll start with Williams. It is kind of funny that they would abandon Caleb Durbin, an undersized infielder who plays up above what his stature should be, and then they just are going to pivot straight to another one of those very same sorts of players. Jett Williams is a little bit different, a little bit more power, you know, but you know, similar speed profile. I don't think he's going to be up super fast. I just don't. I think he needs to prove that he can be an impact hitter before like, the minors, before they're even going to give him a chance. Pratt's interesting, but the Fisher thing is weird because college bats are the ones that move fast. They just are. But the Brewers specifically have not been the organization to put guys on a rocket ship through the minor leagues. I mean, they have a top five talent in baseball in Jesus Mate, and everyone's like, wow, this guy could rocket through. And he got promoted, but not, it hasn't been like to the moon, you know, wow, he could be in play. No one thinks that he's going to be in play for this year, right? I wonder if the Brewers would ever make that decision. I think that they just like to have guys in their system and develop a little bit more than that. So do I think it's likely? No. But if there is going to be a category of player that can all of a sudden just like jump onto the radar out of nowhere, my guess would be it would be Fisher.
I'm so interested, and we just did an episode on spring training roster battles and top prospects who have a legit shot to make the major league team. Again, I don't think it's Fisher, but I am watching Brewer spring training a lot more closely now than I was planning to last week. Back, if you asked me a couple of days ago, I was at, obviously I'll tune in for the Jesus Mata at-bats, but I have no pretense that there's going to be another guy who can impact the roster. They already have an overflowing infield of guys with major league experience. So there'll be some showcases, but there won't be any legit shots to make the club. Now, I still don't think there will be any real drama around some of these. And they need a third baseman. I don't know who that's going to be. It's got to be someone internal, or it's got to happen quick. But yeah, I don't think it'll be Fisher zooming through the system, pulling a Christian Moore, but I'm going to watch what he does. I'm going to watch where he plays. If he's getting third base reps, I'm going to note that in the old mental Rolodex. One final stop in Boston too, before we sign off. I am curious about your current opinion of Marcelo Meyer, because I think this is an odd one where if you told Red Sox fans on opening day 2025 that he surged in camp and made the club and was going to start, they would be like, great, here are the keys, take them. But Alex Bregman showed up, clogged the picture. The expectations change when Bregman shows up. You're thinking major league all-star talent. We need a couple more established cornerstones before we start incorporating these prospects, giving them the spotlight. Now it feels like it's his job to lose. Christian Campbell sort of buried to the side. Do you think he is someone who can handle an everyday job right now? Or are they going to end up platooning him by midseason? Or are Red Sox fans going to end up ruining that and wishing they still had an established major league talent at the position?
They might end up wishing there was a major league talent, just because that's true of like any really young guy. It's like, you know, that sophomore season, you know, opposing teams have gotten a better look at him. They know how to attack him. How does he make that adjustment? And that could result in a bad season. I still like Meyer is the thing. I think that he has real offensive upside, along with being a strong defender on the left side of the infield somewhere. I think he has the arm for third. I think he could really, he could be a breakout candidate this year. He got kind of overshadowed because he got hurt, and there was obviously Roman Anthony. Boston fans may be aware of that guy. And I think what's going to matter, especially as we close camp, is how everyone's playing and what the picture looks like when all the pieces are fitting together. Like, what's going on with Christian Campbell? Because if you have a roster where it's like, okay, I can see this is where the veteran talent's going to be kind of keeping an eye on things, make some stability. And then we have these young guys sprinkled in at these spots and in these roles. If Meyer is just platooning, I think that'd be disappointing, to be blunt. I think that would be. And I think, because I think he's better than that. But it's possible. And if that's the case, then that's the configuration where you're like, wow, what was Boston thinking? Like, the dust settles and this is what you ended up with. But if Meyer's good at third and he's getting most of the time and he's hitting really well, and like maybe you get that this opportunity gives them a chance to put Christian Campbell somewhere he normally wouldn't be able to go. Again, these are all things we get to see actually happen. And to be blunt, can't really figure out what in God's name Craig Breslow is doing at any given moment. So hopefully they figure it out.
Romy Gonzalez's shoulder might end that platoon nightmare before it ever gets the chance to begin. But hey, I'm not sure you're going to find 23 minutes on this trade and the repercussions on any other podcast. All the more reason to come back to the Baseball Insiders next week. Hit subscribe. Join us on the audio feed as well, the Baseball Insiders Prospect Show, every Tuesday here with Eric Cole and myself. Until next week, take care, everybody.
Studies show that 100% of everybody in the world wants to curl up indoors and do nothing because it's so darn cold out there. That's why many people are turning to Bombas, whose pillowy plush slippers and warm merino wool socks have been said to be the most comfortable in the history of feet. Bombas products have been found to boost coziness by up to 1,000,000%. Okay, enough fake statistics, but could Bombas socks and slippers really be the cure? Go to bombas.com/audio and use code audio for 20% off your first purchase. That's BOMBAS.com and use code audio.